A very good afternoon to you, Namibia, and to our listeners tuning in from around the world. Thank you for choosing Eagle FM. I am your host, Nafa Happy Juju, and you are listening to On The Ready News Analysis, your trusted space for informed updates, critical insights, and unpacked developments shaping Namibia's economic, social, and governance landscape. It's Tuesday, the 28th of October, 2025, and as we move further into the week, we continue doing what we do best, unpacking the stories that matter from governance to grassroots, from policy to the people. On The Reader is your weekday guide to what matters most, bringing you the headlines behind the headlines every Monday to Friday from 1300 hours to 1430. Now, this isn't just another news show. On The Reader News Analysis is about depth and dialogue. It is where we interrogate the stories shaping our nation, ask the hard questions, revisit past coverage, and connect the dots through archived audio, expert commentary, and sharp analysis. From major policy decisions to the everyday realities of Namibians, we bring you the full story with context, clarity, and credibility. Our interviews are long-form and in-depth because some stories deserve more than just sound bites. We come prepared with research, background, and your questions to make sure every conversation brings us closer to understanding what truly lies beneath the surface. Now remember, you can catch On The Reader live on all Eagle FM frequencies via the Eagle FM app or the Eagle FM website. And don't forget to subscribe to our WhatsApp channel for real-time updates, exclusive interview clips, and behind-the-scenes content. So stay tuned, stay curious, and step beyond the surface. This is On The Reader, when Namibia comes to think. Now let's jump straight into today's top stories. The David Namwandi Trust launched the Mental Health and Suicide Ideation Research Results Workshop today, an initiative aimed at addressing the alarming rates of suicide in Namibia. Speaking at the launch, Dr. David Namwandi emphasized that mental health remains a critical national concern and called on all Namibians to play a role in creating a more compassionate and supportive society. The trust undertook the research to uncover the root causes behind Namibia's high suicide rate, the highest on the African country. Speaking at the event, Dr. Namwandi spoke about the findings that spoke about why the research was necessary so as to find solutions and answer the why 522 lives were lost to suicide during the 2023-2024 financial year, with 124 deaths also recorded in a short period, of which 108 were men. Dr. Namwandi stressed the urgent need to use these findings to inform evidence-based policies that promote early detection, timely intervention, and stronger support systems, particularly for men and boys who remain the most affected demographically. He further appealed to Namibians to be mindful of one another's emotional well-being, urging communities to foster kindness and understanding rather than judgment or isolation. We must build a nation where everyone feels loved and valued and where every person has a reason to live, he said. The Dr. Namwandi Trust reaffirmed its commitment to supporting mental health initiatives and contributing to efforts that promote psychological well-being and suicide prevention in Namibia. Let's now take a listen to Dr. David Namwandi himself speaking at the launch today.
You know, one day I attended the funeral of somebody I knew, and I saw him growing. You know, one day I attended the funeral of somebody I knew, and I saw him growing under my eyes. This person committed suicide under very mysterious conditions. And there's something I said in Shombo, and it went viral. I said, omihapungaze nyimbo kadi chikuta mudada peni antu inafasana. I believe you are all sitting next to people who may, in one way or the other, understand the language that I've just spoken now. Please interpret or translate. I want to tell you that we are differently wired. And the devil is truly a liar. The devil is attacking the most brilliant individuals in our society. I don't know whether you have observed that. Many people who took their lives are the best in our land. And even if you hear the testimonies, you see those people who are saying, this is what happened to me. And look at them, including her. Brilliant people. The devil is a liar. And in Jesus' name, he should not be allowed to succeed. He must never be allowed to succeed. David Namwandi Trust, trustees, and I want to thank them in their absentia, they decided to put their money where their mouth is and fund these very important research activities, with one aim, to find out the root cause. It's a root cause. The root cause why Namibia have the highest number of suicide in the continent. For those who do not know, Namibia, you're leading. We want to know why. Hopefully this morning, we are going to know why. We want to know why 2023-2024 financial year, 542 lives were lost as a result of suicide. We also want to know why, according to the Namibian policy statistics, 124 suicide were recorded in a shortest period of time, between January, I think, and March. And out of that, 108 are male. We want to know why. That is what we want to know. We also want to know, what is it that out of the population of the world is now 6 or 8 billion. 720 people die as a result of this cruel animal called suicide. We do know why. And also want to know why 2/3 of those people who die of this as a result of this cruel animal called suicide are male. We want to know. Sioni, when he was standing here, he said about 9. There are 1,000 people die as a result of what? Suicide. We want the reversal. The trend has to be reversed. You might want to know that Barbados, Attica, and Barbuda The rate is very low worldwide. That is 0.3 per 1,000 people. We want to know why Namibia cannot be at that, or even less. That is the reason why we are here this morning. The last thing I want to hear is the word impossibility. It's not possible. We don't want...
Let's pause here now to make room for a scheduled commercial break.
Great news! Imba just got even better. We have added brand new features to make your experience smoother, faster, and more powerful than ever before. Ready to unlock the full potential of Imba? Get all exclusive features for just 36 Namibian dollars a month, or save even more with our special subscription plans. 5% discount for 3 months subscription, 10% discount for 6 months subscription, and 25% discount for 12 months subscription. Choose the plan that works best for you and start enjoying everything Imba has to offer at an unbeatable price. Imba, where the world congregates. Download it and subscribe today.
Listen to Eagle FM in Lodritz at 91.2 FM. Listen to...
And we resume.
And to hear impossibility. Look, she had just said, we freed ourselves. We are a nation of heroes and heroines. The war we fought here was a serious battle. A fierce battle. If we could defeat that army, which was in this country, we could as well defeat this animal called society. We could, provided we put our heads together, because this is a concerted effort. It's not NGO, it's not a government, it's not university, it's the work for all of us as a nation to fight. Because we have an elephant in the crop. We want to transform our society. To transform our society, let our people know we are living in this world and the world will never be a paradise. There will always be problems. Problems are there to be resolved. We must never resort to. But we must not be the cause of people to be tempted to commit suicide. We ought to be mindful about other people's feelings. Today, tomorrow, and forever. At the back of our minds, we must know mental health is real. It's real. It's a painful reality in our everyday life. In our everyday lives. Behind every voice, the number in this report that you are going to receive this morning, it's a name, a face, a story, a family left broken with unanswered questions, and the community left in grief. In grief. The alarming rates of suicide in our country are not just a public health crisis. It is a signal of broader struggles of our societies today. I want to thank most sincerely that you have decided to come. My brothers and sisters, this is historic. Historic because our generation yet unborn to read the records of what has happened today in this small room. The findings. Findings must help to formulate policies by those who are entrusted to formulate those policies for a better Namibia. We must reinforce early detection and support mechanisms with particular emphasis on men and boy child. I want this research to be a guide and a wake-up call. Let it drive us to transform policies into protection. Data into compassion. And awareness into action. To every researcher, stakeholder, an advocate in this very room. Thank you. Thank you for giving a voice to those who can no longer speak for themselves. Thank you. May your work continue to illuminate the path towards healing and hope. I believe together we can conquer. Let us strive to build a nation where every life is valued and every person has reasons to live. David Namwandi Trust will not stop here. We will continue to assist where we can. This is a commitment and it will come to pass. Lastly, and very lastly, be rest assured, I love you. I trust you. And I want you to know that a human being is like a bag of salt. When you put a bag of salt in water, if you are back in 20 minutes, you only remove the bag and the salt will dissolve in the water. Wherever you are, wherever you go, you must be a psychologist. You must be Dr. Njaba. She's a psychologist. You must be a police. Do you know that these brothers and sisters in uniforms are going through tough times? Many people don't know that. They are seeing so many things on a daily basis. If it's not suicide, it's housebreaking. And they are working under extremely difficult conditions. We must continue to pray for them. Encourage them, because they are human beings. They are not machines. For this, I thank you very much.
Dr. David Namwandi speaking at the launch of the Mental Health and Suicide Ideation Research Results Workshop today said, and I want to emphasize, said that the findings must help formulate policies for a better Namibia, that we must reinforce early detection with support mechanisms with particular emphasis on men and the boy child, noting that he wants this research to be a guide. He further called that we need to be mindful of other people's feelings today and forever, that we should not be the cause of suicide crossing someone's mind. He called on building a nation where everyone is loved and everyone has a reason to live. He further said that the David Namwandi Trust has made a commitment to assist where it can. Now, with that being said, let's now take a listen to Dr. Blessing Tafenyika, who is part of the research team and hereby now presents some of the findings of that research.
So based on the secondary data that we analyzed and our initial engagement with the Ministry of Health, the team was really motivated to go deep to find out what is the voice of the Namibians. So we focused on three regions, Oshana, Comas, and Omusati. Later, we were referred also to Omaheke because of the other settings, especially with the correctional services. So those are the four regions that we went to and engaged different stakeholders. And amongst our stakeholders, we had to consult with the religious leaders to hear the voice of the churches and what they are, how they view this, and what are the measures in place. We also engage traditional authorities, the community leaders, the Ministry of Health, especially the Mental Health Center, correctional services, institutions of higher education, as well as the civil society. So in doing all this, our idea was to engage the nation at large in different settings so that we get a comprehensive understanding of the roots of this suicide. So from the Ministry of Health and Social Services, our consultation brought a lot of factors that they find or they come across on their day-to-day engagement with their patients and receiving people that are coming there for different services. And some of them included the mental illness of the patients that they are having in the mental health center. The reports showed that some individuals with psychotic disorders actually experience the auditory hallucinations where they experience voices telling them to end their lives. Apart from the mental illness that the patients are suffering, they also discovered that through their interactions with them, there is some drive that is coming from the economic hardships. Our nation is suffering, especially financial hardships, emanating from losing jobs, troubled relationships that are also creating such tensions. And at the end, be it children, be it women who were also depending on men, or be it the men themselves who are pressured to sponsor, to support the families, they end up sometimes having emotional or mental health issues arising from that. Then there are also factors that are coming from the gender norms that we associate with. These are coming from our culture, where usually men, they are brought up being taught to suppress themselves. They are not as open as women, such that most of the times they go through a lot without outpouring. Also, they have come across cases of substance abuse, especially alcohol, and the drugs are becoming a national crisis. So such substance abuse eventually, if no intervention takes place, they drive people to mental health issues. Then the youth were also cited as being more vulnerable. Why? Because children experience depression and suicidal thoughts, even when they are, especially when their material needs are not covered. So from the mental health center in the Ministry of Health, these are some of the causes that they informed us from their interaction with their patients. In terms of strategies, what they have in place, they highlighted the biopsychosocial treatments approach that they implement in dealing with the patients. So this approach is rooted in a model that seeks to address the biological, the psychological, as well as the social dimensions. So they have a variety of specialists ranging from counselors, the psychiatrists, as well as even the general wardens, try and provide that supportive environment towards addressing their challenges. Then there's also social work and community support, where the social work team connects patients with community resources and support networks so that in their therapy, they get different exposures. Then they also give gender-sensitive counseling, especially to men who lack dedicated support groups. This allows them to discuss, to open up, share their emotions, as well as relational issues safely through those support systems. With regards to substance abuse, they recognize that they must also address substance abuse and its prevention, especially amongst the youths. So this came as a recommendation to say more is needed on how we can actually address the substance abuse. Then also school-based coping mechanisms, where schools should establish systems where students can be sensitized on the dangers, especially of engaging with substance abuse, as well as being able to understand emotional literacy and how they can cope depending with the experiences that they encounter. So this is what we gathered from the Ministry of Health. We moved on to look at stakeholders under institutional care, and we focused more on the prisons, the correctional services. And in correctional services, we got quite a lot of input, which included some mental illness and psychotic disorders. We had an opportunity to engage the correctional services staff. We also engaged the general offenders as well as the SPDs. The SPDs are the special state presidents' decisions. Okay. These are inmates that are detained because of some activities that resulted from some disorders that they have mentally. So we had a variety of inputs there. So we have some interesting quotes there that came out, where the staff indicated that individuals with psychotic disorders, sometimes they also experience those auditory hallucinations that command them to go on and take their own lives, even in the absence of depression. Just being in an institutional care where you have lost your freedom and your daily lifestyle also find them hallucinating and hearing those voices. Apart from that, the acceptance of their condition, especially when they go under observations, you know, when they commit a crime, they are put through observations, where they may be declared that they have any issues. So upon hearing the condition and being declared that you have such a condition, some they don't take it easily. There is one of the inmates who actually came out saying, they informed me that I have schizophrenia, a mental sickness caused by substance abuse. So when he expressed that, even himself accepting that condition wasn't easy for him. So most of them, they go through the same. When they are informed of their conditions, it is not easy to take in. And some, they think this is the end of life and they don't see the reason to go on. Another theme that stood out regarded socioeconomic and relationship stressors, citing financial hardships like losing their jobs and also being in troubled relationships as causing such triggers. Some out there, before they entered into the facility, they commit crimes because of the economic hardships. That stood out very well, where they were saying they found themselves in those situations, not because they intended to, but the economic hardships that they found themselves, they could not bear. Then some of the inmates that we talked to, they cited relationship issues. They ended up engaging in activities such as abusing their partners, some even passion killing because of relationships. So those are some of the encounters that with their emotional state, they failed to control themselves and ended up in those situations. Then while they are in prison, they are experiencing challenges, especially with regards to support from families. Most families, when we have such a situation in the family, we tend to neglect or we feel we are punishing them. But our attitude, the support that we give them and that neglection also drives them to see this is the end of life, and they are they find themselves with suicide ideation. Again, in correctional facilities, we found influence from cultural norms and gendered emotional suppression. This also agreed to the findings from the Ministry of Health, especially the men. They say they go through a lot. They do not share or express themselves. And at the end, it drives their emotions and they find themselves committing crimes. One cited that we were taught that showing feelings is weakness. And so most men here, they bottle up until they explode. So the explosion part of it, they may find themselves in trouble and they end up in prisons. They also expressed prolonged detention and lack of discharge clarity. Unlike the general offenders who may know the term of their sentences, the SPD inmates, they are kept under institutional care until all the expertise certify that they are now able to reconcile with the community. So that state of staying there without knowing up to when, they are not sitting very well with it. And most of them, they find themselves wanting to commit suicide. So upon engaging also with the staff, I'm glad that when Prof was giving his speech, he cited that you see them in uniforms, but these people, they go through a lot. We engaged the staff from the correctional facilities. They also indicated that they need that support themselves. They also need counseling as much as the prisoners do because of what they go through. They expressed the conditions, some of the cases that they attend to, they also traumatize them and they need support. Another highlight that came from the staff members is that there is lack of expertise, especially within the prison facilities. They expect the government to give them support, even the civil organizations, the churches, give them support, especially to educate them on how to do counseling. Some expressed that it should be mandatory that when you are working with prisoners, you also undergo those trainings, because sometimes counselors are very far, psychiatrists are very far, the chaplains are also not available, but they have to engage with those cases on a daily basis. So they asked for such support. Next, we...
With that, let's pause here now and take a trip to the marketplace. Of course, we'll be back with more right here on the Reader News Analysis.
Lipurane ngelo wapumbwa Eva Tere ulikoni maondo toto ingida ashike kapeno nwe kutite opoye ekukulile oshafa fana nongeshe faili mehola mo iho etike kovano hile koshuala onongeshe fa ya pumbwa kukaraya kovano okupitira mo Eagle FM otuna evi tota njuka okukwetira oipindi konu konda doi inawa nune udo otukwetira o special ange tashake ngeshe fa omarudi dayo loka opone ushendi fenawa nokumona oijamo ili nawa ninge Pata fanona, Monica ko Eagle FM, onora isatu imwe bali heali, nola natu heali bali no heali. Ile ko berewa, mura hetatu natu, bali o hetatu batatu, o mafilane Eagle FM.
Listen to Eagle FM in Lutheran's at 91.2 FM. Listen to Eagle FM in Omthea at 90.5. Listen to Eagle FM in Mariental at 101.2. Listen to Eagle FM in Okahanja at 104.0.
Did you know the University of Namibia Alumni Association will host its elective annual general meeting on Wednesday, the 5th of November 2025 at 17:30? The meeting will be held virtually, allowing alumni to join from all corners of the world. All UNAM alumni are invited to be part of this important occasion as we reflect on their achievements, discuss key motions, and elect a new executive committee. AGM link will be shared closer to the date, and all reports will be available on the UNAM website. Don't miss this opportunity to connect and shape the alumni legacy.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person who does not have capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in parliament, let me not take up my Katatura menace.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to
be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past, and it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Now, if you haven't, make sure that you grab your copy of Monday's edition. Remember, The Villager releases social economic stories every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. Now, Monday's edition covers the following headlines. Only 37% of Namibia's power generated locally in August. The rest is imported. Umburu Battery Storage received its power conversion system. Okachari allocates 8 hectares of land for horticulture youth project. Critical raw materials and minerals found in household waste. South Africa exits FATF green list. Namibia remains. Namdia invests $5.9 million in the Kavango West rural education. That's what we have for you in yesterday's edition of the e-paper. Make sure you do subscribe by sending a text message to 081 200 200 4144 in order to receive your tri-weekly dose of social and economic news. But for now, let's pause here again and make room for a scheduled commercial break. We'll be back shortly with more.
You've leveled up in life, and now it's time to level up your contact. MTC is changing the game with our new contract data plans. More data, more voice minutes, and more SMSs. Core of everything you need. Plans start from just $199 per month. And for a limited new customer's score, an extra 10 gigabytes of data valid for 90 days, absolutely free. Don't wait. Visit any MTC mobile home or call 1-2-000 to level up today. MTC, make the connection.
Zimbabwe is gearing up to host the 2026 Southern African Development Community Sustainable Energy Week, also known as SEW, set to take place in the iconic resort town of Victoria Falls. The event will bring together regional energy experts, policymakers, investors, and innovators under the theme Driving Regional Economic Growth Through Clean Energy and Energy Efficiency. The 2026 Sustainable Energy Week aims to foster dialogue and partnership that accelerate the transition and inclusive energy systems across Southern Africa. As the region continues to face challenges such as energy insecurity, climate change, and rising demand, this platform will serve as a crucial space to showcase renewable energy technologies, promote energy efficiency solutions, and align regional strategies with global sustainable goals. By hosting the event, Zimbabwe positions itself at the forefront of regional energy transformation, highlighting its growing investment in solar, hydro, and other renewable energy projects. The conference will also explore cross-border energy cooperation, financing mechanism for green projects, and opportunities to empower local communities through sustainable power solutions. Now, with delegates expected from across SADC region, of which Namibia is also among, and beyond, the 2026 Sustainable Energy Week promises to be a defining moment for Southern Africa's collective journey towards a cleaner, more resilient, and economically vibrant energy future. Let's now take a listen to the minister in Zimbabwe.
The so-called ambitious targets of achieving universal access will be achieved even way before 2030, like Ndlunkulu was saying. For someone who doesn't have energy, they can't wait for 2030. So let me introduce our honorable minister, who will come and speak to us in terms of how we need to move forward, not just as a country, Zimbabwe, but how we will facilitate the regional integration issues. Honorable Minister.
I want to start by also thanking SACRI and SADC for deciding to hold this on an annual basis. And this annual basis is based on the fact that SADC, as has been already been said, is the most advanced in power pools. We were in Japan, all the African power pools recently, and we were very happy to be led by our Southern African power pool to demonstrate how far we have gone in terms of our inter-country marketing of energy. But it clearly showed that we can easily connect to East Africa through Zambia and Tanzania, and we can clearly easily connect it to Central Africa through our connection to the DRC. And once we have clearly connected to East Africa, we will have the dream to go to Cape, from Cape to Cairo, because East Africa is already connected to the northern part, and the northern part which connects to Egypt. Egypt is connected to the Zagreb areas, so that line will be connected, and the Zagreb is connected to the Middle East. But the further west, if we are connected to Central Africa, we will connect to West Africa, and West Africa is also connected to North Africa through Mauritania and Morocco. So the African market in energy can be achieved in order to achieve vision 2063. So I'm delighted that SACRI is championing the renewable energy aspect of it, although all forms of energy are very important for us, especially for us in the southern part of the SADC. SADC is very fortunate that it is engaged in two similar energy-related production systems. The northern part, which is Zambia, DRC, Angola, and Tanzania, have hydroelectricity as a major contributor to our energy mix. The southern part, which is Zimbabwe, Botswana, and parts of, and of course, South Africa, mostly is coal-based. So thermal becomes the driving force. So these two interconnected, interrelated energy systems should give us the security that we need in the Southern African region. So over the years, I've also been able to look at first-hand transformative power of energy. If you look at communities where a single solar panel lights up a classroom, the children get changed, and you can see it. I have met women who, thanks to clean cooking technologies, no longer suffer the health hazards that are connected with firing your cooking through firewood or coal. And these women desire to have a lifestyle that is equivalent to those who already have commercial energy, such as electricity and LPG. I've also spoken to young entrepreneurs. I was at the border with Mozambique, where we were giving solar energy, and I went into a store with for a young man, and I said, "What has changed?" He said, "What has changed is that we have become Bindura. While we are in the border with Mozambique, we now have enough for people to come and drink cold beer." He started with beer. I didn't choose the words, but he started with he started with beer, and but also went into cold drinks, and we can now preserve our other perishables. So, if you go to the schools where the Minister of Lands has put these school business units with solar and irrigation, drip irrigation, and the children who last year were supporting with maize meal, but no relish, but they can now grow their own cabbages, they can grow their own tomatoes. You see a difference in between those who already have this energy than those who don't have. So small businesses and other others in our society value the issue of energy. And what is easily reachable to all parts of Zimbabwe is renewable energy. So when we are holding this renewable energy, we are not just celebrating, we are actually saying, let's see the faces of our people, how this energy becomes a transformative issue for them. Energy is not just about kilowatts. It is therefore about the dignity of an individual. It is something that gives opportunity to businesses. It is something that gives hope to everybody. So when we think about what we are going to do in Victoria Falls, and we exhibit, and SACRI is saying, let's come and exhibit, just think of your company, think of your institution. How can we demonstrate hope? How can we demonstrate that we can give you dignity? And therefore, when SACRI is calling upon you to come and participate, don't look at SACRI. Think of the people in your area that you ought to save. The 2026 SADC Sustainable Week was held, will be held in Victoria Falls, as I have already said. The theme, driving regional economic growth through clean energy and energy efficiency. This is our aim. We have just finished through the ministry and cooperating partners, as well as other institutions, assessment of energy efficiency. 20 institutions have been looked at, and you can tell that with energy efficiency, some of what you are doing will be much cheaper. So it's no regrets to do energy efficiency. It's for your good, it's for your pocket, it's for you to get more money, but it contributes to the economic efficiency as well, because energy happens to influence everything that we do. This year, in Botswana, the SADC Sustainable Energy Week saw a landmark moment, which saw 800 people participating. And as I have said, given the majestic scene that we are going to do in Victoria Falls, we should definitely surpass Botswana. We are not competing with Botswana because they have their own advantages. But Victoria Falls gives us an opportunity to surpass the 800 people who attended in Botswana. And by the way, it was well arranged from the intervention of the vice president, the president himself, the vice president, who is the minister of finance, and other ministers from Botswana, the colorful minister of minerals and energy, and all others. This was well done. But we think that we can provide that same situation here in Zimbabwe. So similarly, next year in February, and the dates are already announced, we expect the ministers, we expect special institutions, we expect investors, we expect not only those from SADC. When I was in the Africa Energy Week, where our president was billed to be the official opener of that, and he was unable to come, and I had to send my his apologies to the organizer, NJ Ayuk, and I told him, our president say you should come to our Energy Week next year. He said, I'll bring a basket of energy promoters that you have never seen. So we expect that not only Southern Africa, but Africa can also come and participate. But we have to take a lead. Those of us in the SADC region, we have to take a lead. So next year, the participation must become better and better. Botswana was inaugural, Zimbabwe is second, and it will go further and further. But let's also lay the base at a higher level than what we saw in Botswana. The outcomes are outlined by the executive director for SACRI of that launch, which was done in Botswana, and I will not go through it. The African Union, except to say the African Union came up with the Africa Single Electricity Market, targeted at interventions to facilitate a sustainable development of the African electricity sector through an integrated continental electricity market. I have already said this is a vision which I think is moving faster than any other visions. I know that in communications, particularly in our railway systems, in our road networks, in our ICT, we are getting that integration. In our industrial marketing, we are getting that vision. But I think energy as an enabler is already setting the pace, and that augurs very well for our African market in general, but the energy and electricity market in particular. The goal is to give African households, businesses, and industries a more secure, sustainable, reliable, competitive, and affordable energy. That is the aim. And that's why in this room we have our ZERA, Zimbabwe Electricity Regulator Authority. And SADC, in its wisdom, as Ndlunkulu has said, these zeras have become rarer.
And you're listening to the voice of the Minister of Energy and Power Development, that is Edgar Moyo of Zimbabwe. He's speaking, of course, at the announcement of Zimbabwe to host the 2026 SADC Sustainable Energy Week in Victoria Falls. Now, of course, we pause right here and take a trip to the marketplace. We'll be back shortly with more news. Stay tuned.
Goeie nuus, Embed nou nog beter geword. Ons het splinternuwe funksies bygevoeg om jou ervaring vinniger, beter en kragtiger te maak as ooit tevore. As jy gereed om die volle potensiaal van Embed te geniet, kry alle eksklusiewe funksies vir slegs $36 per maand of spaar selfs meer met ons spesiale intekenplanne. 5% afslag vir 'n 3 maande intekening, 10% afslag vir 'n 6 maande intekening en 25% afslag vir 'n 12 maande intekening. Kies die beste plan vir jou werk en geniet al die voordele wat Imba bied teen 'n onverbeterlike prys. Imba, waar die wêreld saamkom, laai dit af en teken vandag aan.
Get the best for less at USave. 2 kilograms Omaeta cultured milk, just $48.99 Namibian dollars. 2 liters of Riet Fontaine nectar juice, just $34.99 Namibian dollars. 500 grams of King Polony, just $24.99 Namibian dollars. Knorr packet soup, $30 Namibian for any 5. That's just $6 Namibian each. Take a break with Nestle Kit Kat chocolates, just $10.99 Namibian dollars. And a 2 liter Co-E cool drink, only $12.99 Namibian dollars. USave, your low budget grocery store. Where good food costs less.
Welcome back, and now we tell you what's making headlines in terms of economic indicators and trading economics. Now, one US dollar today is equals to $17.24. £1 sterling is equals to $22.94. €1 is equals to $20.05. €1 Swiss franc is equals to $21.70. €1 United Arab Emirates dirham is equals to $4.69. €1 Botswana pula is equals to $1.29. Moving over to trading economics, Iran's gross domestic product contracted by 0.1% quarter on quarter in the 3 months to September 2025, following a 0.2% expansion in the previous period, according to preliminary estimates. Now, this marks the first economic decline since the fourth quarter of 2024, largely reflecting a downturn in the multinational-dominated industrial sector. Now, on an annual basis, the economy grew by 10.5%, easing from a 17.1% expansion recorded in the previous quarter. Industrial production in India expanded by 4% from the previous year in September of 2025, consistent with the upwardly revised 4.1% increase in August and firmly above the market consensus of a 2.6%. Now, the increase marked 12 consecutive months of growth in Indian industry, with 3 straight periods of growth above the 4% threshold, adding to the stronger growth momentum for the G20's fastest growing economy and reflecting some resilience to the aggressive tariffs by the US. France's 10-year OAT yield hovered around 3.4%, near a 2-week high, as investors weighed political uncertainty and awaited key central bank decisions later this week. Now, the National Assembly on Monday reached a budget compromise by passing an amendment increasing taxes on the country's largest companies, aiming to reduce the fiscal deficit from 5.4% this year to 4.7%. A socialist party threats to table a no-confidence motion over wealth taxes adds to uncertainty, though the government continues to oppose the left's proposed levy on the wealthy. A critical vote on the 2026 budget is scheduled for next Tuesday. Markets also eye major central bank moves. Italy's manufacturing confidence index climbed to 88.3% in October 2025, beating market expectations of 87.5 and up from an upwardly revised 87.4 in the previous month. Now, the latest reading marked the highest level since May 2024, reflecting improved expectations for orders. That's what we had for you today in terms of economic indicators and trading economics. We pause here now and take a trip to the marketplace. When we return, we'll tell you what's making headlines in terms of news beyond the borders of Namibia.
Lipura nengeno wapumbwa eva tere ulikoni maondu tuto ingida ashike kapeno nweku tete ofoye ekukurile. Oshafafana nongeshe faili mehola mo iho etike kovano ile koshiwana. Kono ngeshefa ya pumbwa kukaraya kovano. okupitira mo Eagle FM otuna evito danjuka okukwetera oipindi konu konda doini nawa nune udo otukwetera o special ange tashake ngeje pa opone ushendife nawa nukumona oijagwiri nawa ninge pata fanona Monica ko Eagle FM onora etatu imwe bali heali nola natu heali bali no heali ile kumberewa nora etatu natu bali o etatu watatu o mafelane Eagle FM.
Listen to Eagle FM in Ludritz at 91.2 FM. Listen to Eagle FM in Omthea at 90.5. Listen to Eagle FM in Mariental at 101.2. Listen to Eagle FM in Okahanja at 104.0. Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You're the person who doesn't have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to do.
Be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past, and it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Okay, now for news beyond the borders, let's start off in South Africa in regards to heavy rains are expected across SA.
In other news, and in fact, this is a huge story elsewhere in the world as well, heavy rain expected today and tomorrow across the country, while on Friday, we're told it may be.
On the radio news analysis, a very good afternoon to you.
Good afternoon, madam.
Good afternoon, sir.
I must really thank God for being answered this afternoon.
You never call on this show, Uncle
Bernard. I do call sometimes, at least.
Okay.
How are you?
I'm well, thank you. How are you, sir?
So long time. I listen to your program in the night. So very much important.
Yeah.
And you are actually dealing with mental health also.
Yes, this afternoon.
Because you are really doing a very good job in terms of counseling, consulting us from all the trouble relationship that you were spoken by the doctor there.
Mm.
And especially, I'm very much impressed and very thankful to God for Dr. Namwandi.
Mm-hmm.
I think he must be Professor Namwandi.
Yes, Professor Namwandi.
Professor Namwandi.
Mm-hmm.
Professor Namwandi. So you can see how he's emphasizing the mental health issue.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, I don't know, because you see, I know it was a secondary review and things like that.
Yeah.
And I'm happy
the
with
findings.
That research.
Mm-hmm.
The finding, like Dr. said, they must be now developed. They must craft up the policy or programming aligned that are really in line with this findings.
Yes.
So the Minister of Gender, I wish they could have done that also, just to speak to them as focal people and things like that. And they had stakeholders and things like that. I really appreciate that insight from a gender perspective.
Mm-hmm.
Because you see, male, as we know all, that we are apparently like the first nation there, topping in Africa.
Yeah.
And this is really serious and it's troubling the political leadership and everybody. So if you look at the causes of those factors for the boys, there are so many. They are men. So it's good that the part of the Namibia Correctional Service comes in there.
Mm-hmm.
And many, of course, they are told not to cry or show their emotions. And maybe when we now deal with those emotional intelligent issues in counseling, so much that people know how to control their emotions, because the emotion has to be there.
Mm-hmm.
The economic situations and hardship and all these things. Especially, when man and boy child is not given some kind of robust kind of effort there.
Yeah.
And I can give you many examples that from our experience. So a woman can beat a wife, can beat a husband just to hit him like that.
Mm-hmm.
And see, when she's hitting you like that, you say, hit me back, you know you are going to prison. And it's obvious you are going to prison.
It's true, Uncle Bwana.
You report a case like that. There are so many, if they want. For me, I know the people that I know, even myself, you can give them the docket.
Mm-hmm.
So in that process now, a woman is beating you, and the boys' children are being beaten by their mothers, becoming so bitter in their lives, and become angry, wicked. So that even if you go to the police and say, oh, this case, you know, me, I'm talking from a gender perspective now.
Mm-hmm.
So you, yes, madam, coming.
Uncle Bwana, you speak something very significant. Yesterday, I had a conversation with somebody who happens to be male, and you were talking about how the Namibian law enforcement is mostly on the side of the women. That's one thing that he really identified. And he's speaking about how I think we turn a blind eye to the fact that women also do abuse men in relationships and in marriages. And we always tend to think that the woman is the victim, but do we ever really ask, the cause from the men, the root cause from the men? And of course, perhaps not really the root cause, but the cause of disputes, you know, and domestic violence. Of course, I'm not, covering up and trying to, instigate and, be forth for gender-based violence. Absolutely not. But I do trust that women also have their part, their negative part to play, which needs to be spoken about. And at the end of the day, also brought to an end.
So, mommy, those form of gender-based violence, like you mentioned them, economic abuse, psychological abuse, or emotional abuse,
yeah,
those are clear factors,
mm-hmm.
and they are known there. The police, for example, like I give you an example, these are real examples that I'm giving you. So if you want to get the docket and all these things, I know the people, I can also tell you that this is my docket. So now, when a woman is beat, hit you like that and continue and things like that, because you can kick that woman and go to, and really, you can really wound the person.
Mm.
So men who are, that's why sometimes they get to that level. We are not advocating for violence and all this in relationship, because this is what is happening. That's what statistics say.
Yeah.
So you report those cases there, and they will tell you, oh, the woman, who is it? We are going to arrest you. Not even to speak to the woman and come and bring her to the attention and say, okay, this is what you have done.
Mm-hmm.
Women, this is what you have done and this and that and that. Why are you doing that? And then they can also hear the reason from the woman, from even the victim, because the victim, they have gone to open a case there.
Yeah.
That's why I'm thinking about docket here. So these are blind eyes that are turned to men on their complaints.
Mm-hmm.
So it's obvious. And there are very good men there who are not even retaliating and beating them and cutting them into pieces.
That's true.
So we need to thank God for those kind of emotions. People are controlling their emotions. And they are being abused.
Mm-hmm.
Economically, it's so prevalent. Psychologically, because it's something that is invisible, you know what I'm talking about, invisible hand, and now you have the understanding of the law enforcement agency. This is what I'm talking. At one point, Katutola, what is it, this man that is police, what? It's good, things must be integrated now and those.
Mm-hmm.
And then they have to, for 2 days, that woman could not appear there. And then we are threatening, we are going to, no, I don't have transport, I don't, all kinds of things. Women themselves, they do. Men themselves, they do. Or they need also gender sensitization kind of workshop. So thank you very much, my sister. I will not talk about the energy. I think we can go ahead next time for that one. But at this gender-based violence,
mm-hmm.
the findings are there. The University of Namibia also did some study why boys are underachieving and underparticipating mm-hmm. in this academic programs.
Okay.
So all these things are there. It is us. we parents as well in the community, and more especially the law enforcement agents, especially the police, we have been conducting a lot of workshops on gender issue here. People are still failing to understand the unawareness of these things is causing these things. And these things are also happening in Menetumbo.
I think it's time we get into the real work. But thank you so much, Ankabwana, for making time for
welcome,
us.
Welcome, welcome. God bless.
Okay. And of course, let's get back to our news about the weather pattern in South Africa.
In other news, and in fact, this is a huge story elsewhere in the world as well. Heavy rain expected today and tomorrow across the country, while on Friday, we're told it may be relatively drier. The South African Weather Service has issued a yellow level 2 warning for severe thunderstorms. All of this, of course, taking place whilst elsewhere in the world, mostly in Jamaica, there's anticipation of what has been described as the strongest hurricane in Hurricane Melissa to make landfall there. SABC News meteorologist Joel Guy is with us to get us a sense of how things are looking. And perhaps, Joel, we'll start here at home. Good to see you, by the way. I can see there's a level 2 warning in parts of the country. Take us through the likelihood of this impact.
So we are going to see fairly strong rains this afternoon for the northern and eastern parts of the country, but better chances are actually on Wednesday tomorrow for the eastern parts. We will be looking at that. And we have the warning, indeed, level 2 warning for severe thunderstorms for parts of the northwest, Free State, maybe Gauteng and parts of Mpumalanga and KwaZulu-Natal. And as usual, those storms will produce your hail. You can expect a lot of it. Excessive lightning, strong winds are also possible. And some areas might even see some heavy downpours.
Yeah. Around this time, I suppose it's worth reminding our guests what kind of rainfall season we're anticipating. Often you and your colleagues speak of the La Nina and El Nino phenomenon. Sometimes we're somewhere in the middle. What's it looking like, at least for this holiday period, as we kind of look ahead to January, February, March next year?
Yes, you rightly put it. We are currently in the middle of those two phenomena.
Right.
So we call it a neutral phase, but we are slowly moving towards the La Nina. So what that means is that as we head into November, December, January, we should see above normal rainfall compared to what we normally see when the seasons are operating normally.
Yeah, and we know what that means sometimes for the coastal regions like KZN, at least if the past is anything to go by. Before you give us the full weather update, Joe, we have to speak about what's happening along the Caribbean island. Hurricane Melissa, we're told, is now a Category 5 storm. It is the worst or the strongest to hit Jamaica and what is considered the strongest this year in the world.
Yeah, indeed. In fact, we already had 3 Category 5 hurricanes in the Atlantic Ocean and for the Caribbean area, that is around Jamaica, Cuba, Bermuda, and Haiti. This is the strongest one that has hit that part of the Atlantic Ocean for quite a number of years. And it is expected to hit Jamaica in the next couple of hours, so by evening our time. And very heavy rains are expected. You'll be interested to know that Jamaica, the wettest parts, which are the northern parts, normally receive between 1,000 to 1,500 millimeters of rain throughout the year. Now, they're going to be seeing up to 750 millimeters of rain in the next 24 hours. So
sure.
That is almost half of what they experience in a year. And wind speeds are also going to be pretty strong, reaching 250 kilometers per hour, even gusting to 350 kilometers per hour. So that's going to be a lot of damage that can be expected for Jamaica for today. Then in the next 36 to 48 hours, the storm is going to sweep through eastern Cuba, and a lot of damage is also anticipated. It will weaken, however, as it gets into the Bahamas, but still some heavy rains expected for that part of the Caribbean.
And you know,
Pick and Pay narrows losses in the first half.
Pick and Pay reported an acceleration in its like-for-like sales in the 26 weeks ended August 2025, noting that this metric rose by 4.8% at its company-owned supermarkets and by 1.7% at its franchise supermarkets, despite a difficult operating environment.
We're very pleased to report strong growth in our like-for-like sales and even more positive growth in our like-for-like customer footfall in store, which is really very, very positive. And obviously, it's still a constrained market that we're living in South Africa. You know, the market's under pressure, consumers are under pressure, but we're very, very pleased with the growth that we're showing.
The company noted that its internal price-selling inflation level stood at 2.1%, still way lower than average food inflation of 4.6%, while also reporting deflationary pressures on basic goods like maize and rice. One of the areas it's been working on to achieve efficiencies is its stores estate reset program, a key part of its turnaround strategy, adding that this had largely been concluded.
We largely completed our program of closing non-optimum stores in the company, which is a process that we needed to go through. And as part of the cycle of retail, I mean, it was just for a protracted period of time, it hadn't been done. So that's done and behind us now, which is a great positive. And so now we can really focus on the store estate that we have. We've got, it's about 16 or 17 reopenings still to go between now and the end of the year of stores where we've reinvested capital in them. And it's all part and parcel of getting Pick and Pay fit for the future.
Meanwhile, retailer Boxer, which Pick and Pay still has a 65% stake in, saw sales increase by over 13% in the period under review. And Pick and Pay Clothing saw turnover growth of 12%. Victor Siane of Benguela Global Fund Managers described the results as encouraging, although more work needs to be done.
I think the most impressive improvement in the result is the sequential half-on-half increase in their like-for-like store sales, not only in the main Pick and Pay chain, which is the focus of the turnaround, but across all of their chains. So in clothing, in Pick and Pay itself, as well as in Boxer. If you look at the past four quarters, there's been a sequential increase, which has been really good.
So why did market players initially react harshly to the results, driving down the share price by as much as 10%?
One key driver there is that the turnaround at Pick and Pay is going slower than the market is expecting. So Pick and Pay management has guided for the full year loss for the 26th financial year, which ends in February next year, to be equal to the full year loss of last year, the 25th financial year. And that's behind the market expectation. They expected a significant improvement in that trading loss.
Summers says that Pick and Pay is working hard to get to profitability on a sustainable basis through its turnaround strategy, adding that it's a process that's going to take time, but that the company is moving in the right direction. Nompumelelo Seziba, SABC News, Johannesburg.
Debt restructuring at 94%, says the finance minister of Zambia.
4% of the debt has been restructured. So there were three steps. Step number one was where we are organized through the IMF and other cooperating partners, including those countries who had lent money to Zambia. In that first engagement, the issue was to set out commercial terms, on how the debt was going to be restructured. So agreement in principle to agree on the terms of how the debt was going to be restructured. That was the first step. Second step was to convert this agreement in the principle of how the debt was going to be structured, the commercial terms, was to translate that into a memorandum of understanding, MOU, for the official creditors, in other words, government-to-government creditors. And this document, after some protracted discussions, negotiations, was finally signed by the 16 official creditors. 16 of them. They agreed to sign this. There was, of course, some who didn't sign. Most of them agreed to sign that memorandum of understanding. And when you take the value of what was owing these people signed, The value of these debts was 94% of those who signed up to say we are going to restructure Zambia's debt, and they collectively, all of them in one document, they signed off. When you consolidate that, 94% of that was covered.
Meanwhile, Egypt struggles to stabilize the economy amid rising prices.
Nation a few days after raising fuel prices for the third time in a year. He explained the economic difficulties facing the country in simple terms.
Every house has its income and expenses. If the income is less than the expenses, it is a problem. You are forced to borrow, which means paying back installments with interest. Do you know that we subsidize fuel with loans? Each pound I cover in fuel subsidies actually pay back as a loan with interest.
Mohammed Mustafa, who works in maintenance of medical equipment, can relate to that. He says he's unable to cover the monthly costs for his family of four.
My children are four-month-old twins. Because of their needs, the household costs are increasing. Electricity prices, gas bills, and transportation costs have also increased after the recent energy subsidy cuts. Our salaries are not compatible with the inflation rates.
He blames the government for his shortcomings.
The government should look closely at the people who are below middle class, like us, and what we need. It's easy to calculate that salaries do not cover the basic or minimum necessities for any family.
Egypt is battling record inflation rates that exceeded 35% in 2024, an Egyptian pound that lost about 60% of its value, and mounting foreign debt. Relevant austerity measures include cutting energy subsidies like electricity and fuel, which in turn have hiked prices.
The Egyptian president made it clear, although this is a painful medicine, this is the only path for the Egyptian government to be able to improve the livelihoods of Egyptians.
Egyptians should by now have reaped the rewards of economic reforms that started in 2016. But analysts say there were unexpected hurdles along the way.
The president noted that the challenges are not local but global. The impact from the Russian-Ukraine war, increase in international energy prices, and other developments like the COVID-19 pandemic have all led to further economic downturns worldwide.
However, there are signs the government is still on track for its economic developmental goals.
We are seeing an improvement. Ratings agencies upgraded Egypt's credit ratings, foreign currency reserves are increasing, more foreign investments are flowing in, inflation rates are drilling, and there's more liquidity in the markets. But Egyptians will not feel the effects right away. It needs time and sustainability.
For now, the government is trying to strike a delicate balance, one that countless others around the world have tried before. That is to impose austerity measures aimed at a strong economic recovery, all the while having a minimal impact on the lives of ordinary people who make up the vast majority of the population. It has raised salaries, a minimum wage, and pensions, increased social security benefits, and food subsidies for the poor to try to ease public concerns. However, many remain anxious about their future. Yes, Hakim for CGTN, Cairo.
Three people dead are dead in Jamaica as Hurricane Melissa approaches.
As the island braces itself for the imminent arrival of Hurricane Melissa, the storm could be the strongest to ever hit the Caribbean island. Well, these are live images from the capital, Kingston. They show that we can already see heavy rain and strong winds on the city. Well, it's a Category 5 storm, and if it makes a direct hit on Jamaica, it would be the first time that this has happened in more than 35 years. The island could experience winds of 170 miles an hour, with meteorologists warning that because of Melissa's slow pace, it could dump a metre of rain in the coming days, which could increase the risk of deadly floods and landslides. Well, let's show you these live satellite images, which are tracking the path of the storm. Well, four people have also been killed by the storm in the nearby Dominican Republic, as well as Haiti. And warnings are also in place on the islands of Cuba and the Bahamas. Well, our reporter Nick Davis is in Kingston. He sent us an update on the conditions there in the last hour.
I don't know how to describe it. It's just very strong gusts which are starting to come through. Every once in a while, I mean, actually to the point where I had to grab onto a pole just for a second, just for a moment. I don't want to overdo it. But if we get more of that, which is what we're expecting throughout the course of the day, these tropical storm winds coming into areas like Kingston, I can only imagine what it's going to be like further along the southwest, where that storm, Melissa, is expected to make landfall.
Well, we've received images from the U.S. Air Force Reserve crew known as the Hurricane Hunters flying through the eye of Hurricane Melissa on Monday to collect data for the National Hurricane Center. Well, with wind speeds of up to 282 kilometers an hour, the Category 5 hurricane is, as we've been saying, the world's strongest storm of the year. Bob Larson is a senior meteorologist at ACT.
And with that, we have come to the conclusion of today's episode of On the Radar News Analysis. Do stay tuned for the Onkonana Dingi program, brought to you by Lois Eshimi, also the Home Run Show, brought to you by Dwight and Helmut at 16:30. Don't forget the business economic segment, brought to you by David Chombe at 1800 hours. From Indafa, happy Jujudas, goodbye. Have yourself a wonderful Tuesday afternoon. And also see you again tomorrow, same time, same place, same frequency for On the Radar News Analysis.